Episode 59.
This is Ethnically Ambiguous.
With Shireen.
And Anna.
And today, for this episode, we're going to be talking about Queen Noor of Jordan and her history and work she's done for the international community.
Yes, and we're talking about the UK's Labour Party adopting the IHRA's definition of anti-Semitism, but with few caveats that allows them to be critical of Israel.
And then we get personal and talk about our experiences at weddings.
Yes, so listen up.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
It's episode
59. Damn, we're fine. What a time. Sorry. Okay. Sorry.
That's amazing. Like, you are on one.
I mean, rhyming is very
fun. We're
going
to have to call this episode We Are Fine. there goes Andy to lay on the cords.
Oh, there she is.
Our studio pup's last producer, she likes to lay on the cords.
Yeah,
it's the dog, the funniest little place for her.
The dog in our pictures sometimes that you see, hashtag dog for likes, is Andy. So
yeah, Andy loves to lay on cords. Sometimes she unplugs our headphones, but that's okay. It doesn't really affect us too much.
We forgive her because she's the cutest dog to ever exist.
She's wearing floral today because florals are in.
Florals are very in. They look very good on Andy as
She kills it every day.
She's bringing it back.
She's the definition of killing it.
Killing it. How's your weekend? We just had Labor Day weekend.
And let me tell you, I did some labor.
Yeah.
No, I did nothing.
I went into labor. No.
I had a labor. And by that, I mean my son was finally born.
Oh, congratulations. What's his name?
His name is Sun.
Sun.
I'm very into naming children after what they are.
I mean, I call every cat, cat. So, yeah.
I'm sorry, have you been calling my cat Cat behind his back this whole time? Because I will find out and you will hear from my lawyers.
But you went to a wedding, right?
I cannot believe you've been calling my cat Cat.
Every cat is Cat to me.
Oh,
it's very to the point. It's easy.
You know what? I'm going to need a minute. What if I just left the podcast?
And I never saw
never
you again.
I just walked out, kept walking.
Like, well, when's the last time you saw Anna? And I was like, well, I admitted to her
Yeah, it started when I called her Cat. yes, I went to a wedding this weekend. Mm-hmm. I'll talk more about it later.
Because I also went to a wedding the end of August. Mm-hmm. And so I want to talk about our experiences as minorities going to white weddings.
That's correct. That will be part of the personal segment at the end.
Bam, 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 bam.
Personal.
Let's get personal. But later.
Even though, that's not happening now. I don't know why we did all that.
It's a little teaser, you know, a teaser trailer.
I just had to turn you up in the headphones. Oh. I'm like a rapper.
Bam, 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 bam.
I just turned you up in the headphones.
Turn me up.
Yeah.
Turn me over like a pancake. I don't know what I have too much caffeine today. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you came in here just hot.
Hot.
You were screaming.
Just begging for human interaction.
Rains in Africa, or Africa by Toto. Screaming it. Not even singing, just screaming it.
It's a great fucking song. The Weezer cover is a watered down version of a masterpiece, and only the real version should be listened to.
Right. What is all this angst towards this Weezer version?
I just don't think you should touch perfection.
I never even heard there was a Weezer cover.
I mean, I just listened to it on the radio because I don't have Bluetooth in my car, so I can't, like, connect my phone that easily, but. Indie radio has been playing it a lot, and I just think they should play the real one because it's 10 times better, if not 20. But why tinker with perfection?
So this just in, Weezer, fuck yourself. that's interesting. Yeah, the Toto version is truly everything.
A masterpiece. But it's also interesting and a little bit like cultural appropriation-y because the writer / singer of Toto that wrote it had never been to Africa when he wrote it. It was just like this idea of Africa in his head that he romanticized. So
I wouldn't say that's cultural appropriation. Like, he wrote a song about a place he'd never been.
No, I like thinking of it that way. But the first time I heard it and realized that, I was like, oh, like, it's not just like roses and excitement. Like, it's a hard place to be. But I don't know. You know what I mean? Kind of. I don't know.
True. But I also feel like sometimes we commonly misconcept, I don't know if that's the way you say that, Africa.
That's true.
We're hard on Africa.
We are. So I guess it is cool that there's a song saying how great it is, but it's also a song based on his idea of it at the time. I think that's the thing that weirds me out. Is like he was.
Everyone knows it doesn't rain in Africa. It's always hot all the time. No, it's not they have no weather.
It's not that. It's that he.
It's the LA of that continent. Africa.
Because he admitted at the time.
Africa is the LA of Africa.
We should change subjects pretty soon because we're getting way too into this. But he just admitted that like he was always fascinated with the continent. Like,
right.
So it's just like a white guy that's like fascinated with I don't know. It just made me weird. It made me feel weird. But I love the song. It's a great song.
You should hear my song, Iceland.
It's gonna take a lot to try.
I've never been to Iceland, but I'm just like fascinated with the fires of Iceland.
Anna, I'm being serious, okay?
And I am as well. It's you like, are disregarding my SoundCloud link.
It's like, okay, for example, it's like if a white guy was like making a song about Japan and they were like, They had never been there. They had just always romanticized and fantasized about Japan.
I feel like that exists.
It does exist. It's Weezer. The lead singer of Weezer. But it doesn't matter.
He's talking about Japan?
No, he just married a Japanese groupie. Oh. It doesn't matter. Let's just change the subject. We're getting way too far into this. But other than the wedding, did you have a good weekend? Because you went away. It was in Northern
California.
You went away.
Yeah, I went to Northern California. It's in the middle of nowhere to go to a wedding on the countryside. It was nice. No Uber.
It seemed really beautiful.
It was very beautiful. It was a wedding on a hill.
Nice.
On a topping hill. There was an infinity pool that was very out of place, but it was there.
I went to a wedding in NorCal last year, and it's just a beautiful place. I love Northern California.
Wine country, bitches.
Drink up. But yeah, I have a lot of birthdays for my family, like, during this time of year. Like, it goes for my dad in July, and then my older sister in August, and then my younger sister, her birthday was yesterday, the 5th, and then my mom's on the 15th. And then there's just me randomly in the spring. But all my family just clustered in, like, a span of 2 months.
So have you been going to San Diego a lot?
I have. I didn't go last weekend, but I've been enough times recently, and my mom and dad are going on an Alaskan cruise for her birthday.
Ooh.
I know.
My dad
really likes
cruises.
No, he doesn't. But my mom really likes traveling, and they've never been on a cruise, so I think it's nice that my mom likes traveling, or not traveling, but exploring. I would say more than my dad. I think my dad is more of a homebody, but I'm glad that they're going out and doing something because they deserve it.
That's, you know, so my parents are the opposite. My dad really likes to travel, and my mom is a homebody. And recently they went to Dallas, and I thought my dad went alone, but turns out my mom went with him. And I was like, how the hell did you drag that lady out? And he was like, I don't know. I just bought the tickets.
Yeah. When my mom met me in New York in July, that was very much her character, like very spontaneous, like I want to walk everywhere or whatever. But I think my dad is more like, let's sign up for a tour and someone will take us everywhere.
So
a
cruise is ideal.
Yeah. So it's like the best of both worlds for my parents. So
Alaskan cruises, I hear, are.
Yeah. That's what their friends went on one and they recommended it. So they're going to go.
No one thinks to go to a cruise to Alaska, but I feel like that's a big one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I guess we can get into what we're going to talk about if you're down.
Hey, look, I'm down like downtown brown jam. Now,
what a clown! Sorry, kill me. Okay, so
tell me a little about your newfound interest in getting into voiceover.
It's not my newfound interest. It's always been an interest of mine.
You came in hot today. I didn't know what you were talking about half the time.
I just think my voice is a great voice, and it has a lot of range, and I want to be a cartoon so badly and or like a video game character. And the voiceover industry is so hard to get into. I just want to voice a cartoon.
Well, you know why? It's because it's like three people.
I know, and that's not fair. I have so much range. I could be so fun. I can pretend, but
it's like Gray Delisle, Tomcat.
Yeah.
Someone else. Oh, and like Pamela Adlon.
Like, it's seriously been a dream of mine since I was a kid. And I think I have a very interesting voice. All my sisters would agree that, like, we've all dreamt about being voiceover because we all have really weird sounding voices.
Why is that?
I don't know. I don't know what it is, but we all sound kind of weird. My parents sound normal. Maybe just in my head.
No, I mean, I'm sure they sound normal because they're just like parents.
But I've heard in the past that I have an interesting voice, and So I would like to utilize it for good. anyways.
That's understandable.
Yeah, but I just think it would be so fun to be a voiceover person. Also, I wouldn't have to wear makeup at all. I would just like, I already have a face for radio. Just makes sense.
I don't think so.
I'm kidding. Okay. Sophie's shaking her head at me.
I think you have a face for print catalogs.
fair enough, yeah.
You have a face for like a JCPenney. It means nothing at all. No, you're honestly probably way too ethnic for a JCPenney catalog. You have face. You actually have a high fashion face because you're so exotic.
Oh, I will take it.
JCPenney is like very bland, neutral faces.
Paste.
Like white bread.
But yeah. If anyone can connect me to be a voiceover... No, I'm just kidding. But I'm not really kidding.
Work your way up, man.
You never know where you meet your connections. It's all about who you know in this town.
All these voiceover producers who listen to Ethnically Ambiguous, give Shireen a call.
Please. DM me on all of it. But... Anyways, back to the point. I feel like I keep going off on these tangents. Today, I want to talk about a topic that was actually suggested by my lovely mother. And it's a good one because no one really talks about this person. It's the Queen Noor of Jordan.
Oh!
Yeah! She has a really unique story, and I want to talk about the good she's done for the Arab world and give you a little bit of history about her because we barely talk about Jordan just because... It's like a neutral place for the most part, and that's because of the work she's done also, her and her late husband. So let's get into it a little bit. She was born Elizabeth Lisa Najib Halabi in Washington, D.C., and she's of Arab, Swedish, Scottish, and English descent. In 1978, she decided to convert to Islam and married Jordan's King Hussein, and then she changed her name to Noor al-Hussein, which means light of Hussein, because the word Noor means light.
Means light in Farsi, too.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that. I like when they are, they translate meanings in both languages. I like that a lot. And so it was depicted and it was described by her and her husband as, like, a fairy tale romance, but he died from cancer in 1999. And King Hussein had a very unique position in the Middle East. He was a pan-Arabist, which means he wanted to unite the Arab nations, which is also what I mentioned was Nasser. Yeah, Gamal Abdel Nasser. He also wanted
King
the same.
King of Egypt,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, he was also the kind of the same persuasion, kind of wanted to, like a pan-Arab. And then he had a deep understanding of Western culture. He was also a consistent political moderate and a dedicated member of the Non-Aligned Movement. The Non-Aligned Movement is a group of states that are not formally aligned with or against any major power bloc, so it's kind of neutral. And the nation of Jordan has been and continues to be a linchpin for Middle East peace efforts. So Lisa Halabi, becoming Queen Noor, Her Majesty, they call her that, she made a really big transition that seems difficult for a lot of American women because she had grown up in a nation with seemingly, I would quote unquote, equal rights and equal voice for both sexes, and she entered a world dominated by men and Middle Eastern politics. She's very respected in both Jordan and abroad, and she actively pursues causes to improve the lives of others. And she's internationally known for her continued commitment to humanitarian work and international women's rights issues, as well as her longtime campaign against landmines. She's also the president of the United World Colleges Movement. And so a little bit of backstory about Queen Noor. She was born Elizabeth Lisa Najib Halabi in D.C. to an Arab-American family distinguished for its public service. She attended schools in Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., New York City, and Concord Academy, Massachusetts before entering Princeton University in its first co-educational freshman class. She's the eldest daughter of Najib Halabi and his wife Doris Carlquist. Her father helped organize NATO under Harry S. Truman, is the former CEO of Pan American World Airways and the one-time head of the Federal Aviation Administration appointed by President Kennedy. And he's also a former Deputy Assistant of Secretary of Defense. So she had a lot of political influences growing up, and she was kind of surrounded by that mentality. And her paternal grandfather was a Syrian immigrant of Lebanese descent who immigrated to the U.S. at the age of 12 and was an oil broker who married an interior designer, Laura Wilkins, in Texas. And they founded the successful Halabi Galleries in Dallas. So she's kind of made up of immigrants that, for as far as we're concerned, achieve the American dream.
Is she Jordanian?
She's not Jordanian. She's Syrian, Swedish, Scottish, and English.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So she received a BA in architecture and urban planning from Princeton in 1974, and she worked on international urban planning and design projects in Australia, Iran, Jordan, and the U.S. And during this time, she traveled throughout the Arab world to research aviation training facilities, and subsequently she joined the Royal Jordanian Airlines as the director of planning and design projects. And she met King Hussein while working in Jordan on the development of the Amman Intercontinental Airport. So King Hussein married Queen Noor after she changed her name after the marriage in June 15th, 1978. They had four children, two sons and two daughters. And the family also included his children from a previous marriage, which was two daughters and a son. And these are all princesses and princes, as they're referred to. And so King Hussein is said to be of direct lineage to Prophet Muhammad, and was known throughout his life as the voice of reason in the Middle East. He was a ruler who made lifelong efforts to bring peace to the war-torn region. He was a friend not only to Arab nations, but also to Israel, which was a big effort in his part to achieve peace in that region. And Queen Noor shared the same longing for peace in the region and was a constant source of support to her husband. Again, he died in 1999 of cancer during noon prayers. She spent her, she spent her teenage years in America during the 60s, and this was a time of social consciousness for her generation, and it's reflected in the course of her life. She attended a school, Chapin High School, and during this time, she did community service in Harlem, and she tutored non-English-speaking students, and she came to understand how difficult it is to break the cycle of ignorance and poverty. She focused her senior architecture and urban planning thesis years later on the same issue about community development in Harlem. So to this day, she contributes her time and abilities on those projects that work towards alleviating poverty and promoting education and self-sufficiency. She explained to Larry King on CNN during an interview, she said, "I've seen it around the world, the poorest countries, and in countries riven with conflict, it is the women who are the key to breaking out of poverty, breaking out of stagnation. It's women who can contribute to real security, not bombs and bullets and repressive governments." She continues to sponsor many projects aimed at increasing educational and work opportunities for Jordanian women. And internationally, she supports UN programs for women and children, in addition to her longtime campaign again against landmines. Other projects she's been a part of is that she initiated, directed, sponsored projects and activities in Jordan that addressed developmental needs in the nation, like education, culture, women and child welfare, human rights, conflict resolution, community development, environmental and architectural conservation, public architecture, and urban planning. She's actively involved in international and UN organizations that address global challenges in these fields. And she's played a major role in promoting international exchange and understanding of Arab-Western relations, Middle Eastern politics, humanitarian, and conflict prevention. And she's been very vocal over the past several years about the Syrian cause and the need to accept refugees into other countries. So with refugees making up about a third of Jordan's population, Queen Noor knows what it means to manage the throngs of people crossing borders in search of security. So Noor, who is of Syrian descent, she spoke of the urgency of humanitarian response to the growing Syrian refugee crisis at Judson University's 6th Annual World Leaders Forum in April 2016. And she was the first American-born queen of an Arab country. And as a widow, she was the first leader in the Middle East to speak at Judson's forum in 2016. So it was a really big moment because this is a forum that is it features world leaders, and she represented us really well as the leader of the Middle East. And I think she gets a lot of respect as well because she's American-born and can speak very articulately in both English and Arabic. And she said during this forum, "We all aspire to lives of dignity and opportunity, a meaningful horizon of possibility. If not in the short term for ourselves, at least for our children and future generations. And the Za'atari refugee camp that opened in 2012 to host Syrians fleeing the violence of the ongoing war is now Jordan's fourth largest city with an estimated 85,000 refugees. Noor, who was on the board of Refugees International, she speaks on behalf of the refugees from conflict zones worldwide, said paths to security, prosperity, and peace requires, and she said that the path to security, prosperity, and peace requires people of all faiths working together to help the millions who are displaced.
That's amazing, because Arabic's a very hard language to learn.
Yeah, I think it's easier. It's definitely, I mean, like, I was really lucky to be born into it.
Right.
Because learning it at a young age, it's all the difference.
Yeah, if it's you're spoken to it, but, like, to, like, learn it, like, in school or something, it's hard.
It's really hard. Because they also teach you the proper way, and you usually speak in, like, a slang version of it.
Yeah, yeah.
She said at this forum, Christ himself was a refugee from political violence when the Holy Family fled to Egypt. We rise or fall by the fate of the least of us. For societies, economies, and nations to thrive, all people must thrive. Refugees can also greatly benefit from the communities that embrace them, she said. And she's also Christian-born, so she has been respected by both communities for the majority of her life, which I appreciate.
What a life.
I know. So... Again, she was the first American-born queen of an Arab country, and she adopted the name Noor, the light of Hussein, when she converted to Islam. And she's addressed in the past the growing anti-Islamic rhetoric that has become a part of the current political discourse in the U.S., as well as the politics of extremism and religious activism sweeping the Middle East. She's quoted as saying, 7th century Islam granted women political, legal, and social rights then unheard of in the West. The oppression of women in parts of the Arab world is not because of Islam, but contrary to it. She said leaders worldwide are watching the U.S. political process and presidential race with mounting concern. Polarization is growing everywhere we look, pitting people against one another across political, economic, social, and sectarian lines. She urged American politicians, instead of putting up walls, to hold up the nation's values of liberty and remain, quote, the beacon of hope it has so long been for the world. She also spoke of the role women can play. She said, women are really at the heart of what the next generation is going to learn. They can give their children something greater to aspire to as well. Women tend to oppose violence and foster reconciliation. And the last thing I want to say about her is, I want to play this clip from April 2017. She was on MSNBC's For the Record, talking about the White Helmets and their work in Syria, because she awarded them with a humanitarian award that highlights the work they do. And she's consistently been drawing attention to the humanitarian crisis in Syria, which is something I really appreciate, and I'm sure everyone else appreciates as well. And again, my mom was the one that suggested that I talk about Queen Noor, so... she even mentioned that, like, no one really talks about her, like, knows about her in the West unless, like, you research her. And she's doing really good work. And so I want to play this clip for you guys right now. This is her on MSNBC in April 2017.
Tell me about the White Helmets.
They are heroes. They're extraordinarily brave. They rescue their fellow Syrians regardless of religion, regardless of politics. They are a non-zero-sum spirit that really reflects the best of the majority of the people of our region. That is the spirit of the people of our region. And I'm so happy that they're getting the recognition they deserve and that people are seeing a true face of not only the people of Syria, but the people of Jordan and so many other countries in the region. These are people who were accountants, bankers, plumbers, lawyers. They represented Syrian society before the war broke out. And they, seeing what was happening to their fellow Syrians, they began to come together in different parts of the country, and then they found that they were doing the same kind of thing and joined together into a force of now over 3,000 people.
The people who the White Helmets rescue or try to protect every single day, they're the internally displaced people, but there are literally hundreds of thousands.
And they're not all displaced. Millions. They're actually, these are their homes that they've insisted on staying in because those are their homes. But you're right, many of them are also displaced.
And then there are those who have gone to other nations, including the nation of Jordan. And I was in Jordan in December, and the Jordanians were quite welcoming, but it's been an incredible burden. Many Jordanians, including an economic burden.
Well, compassionate humanitarianism is in our DNA in Jordan, and it has been throughout history. We had a sudden influx of a 10% increase of our population with the Syrian crisis, and the government has found it difficult to provide services adequately to Jordanians and to refugees. So the international community has been very supportive and helpful, and with them, we've arrived at a more sustainable developmental approach to this crisis.
Is it fair to say that, at least I think this, I've never met anyone who has been to a refugee camp who has ever forgotten it, because it is so painful what goes on in those refugee camps.
And outside those camps as well, among the refugees and others. No, you made a very good point. We were talking earlier about how the face-to-face...
So anyway, it goes on, but that was the main part I wanted to play.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think the work she does is really important. And I did actually look up how she met King Hussein, just because Anna asked me earlier, and I didn't know other than the fact that she was working over there. But basically, she left... Arab Air. She had a job at Arab Air, and she accepted a job with Alia Airlines to become the director and facilities of planning and design in Jordan. And she and the king became friends while he was mourning the death of his wife. And from there, they had a friendship, and the couple became engaged in 1978. So she was working as a part of the development of the Amman Intercontinental Airport, and as the director of facilities planning and design. And then she met him, and then blossomed from there. And she's, as you can tell by the way she speaks, she's very eloquent, very educated, and using her sources and her platform for good, which is all you can really hope for. So yeah,
wow,
that was my piece. Beautiful. Sorry that I'm just on so much caffeine.
It's okay.
And I just like stumbled through so many things, but I hope you got the gist. And I'll put the YouTube video, as well as the sources I have for this, all on the footnotes. So please check out the whole video and just like research her. She's an amazing woman, and she's honestly, I wish I had really the research about her sooner, because she's a great role model for every Arab American woman out there. So yeah.
Well, on that note, let's take a quick commercial break.
We are back.
I literally, while you were talking, was just Google imaging her.
She's beautiful. She's gorgeous. An amazing person inside and out. I just really appreciate the work she's been doing.
She came out and said she supported the Iran deal.
Oh.
Yeah. She's cool.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just weird that we don't hear about her, really. Yeah. You know? And she does so many good things. Unless you seek out the information about a powerful, amazing Arab woman, you won't find it.
It's fascinating.
Yeah. So,
well,
yeah. Hope you learned a thing or two.
I did. I had always heard of her. I know. I feel like we've talked about her, maybe her daughter or her husband, mm-hmm. or her son's wife or something, the princess.
Yeah.
Who like is really into like horses.
Yeah.
Anyway. So absurd. Okay. Something I want to talk about. It's more like a current event sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some hubbub. That's my favorite word. In the word. United Kingdom over the Labour Party. And the Labour Party is like the center left political party in the United Kingdom. It's like social democratic and democratic socialist, and they have like a trade unionist outlook. And yes, I did just Google that and read it to you. But the leader is Jeremy Corbyn, and this week he came out and he said the Labour Party was adopting the internationally recognized definition of anti-Semitism, which is from the IHRA, the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. They said, we're adopting the IHRA definition, which is signed by 31 countries, including the UK and US. And I will get to what the definition is. But we're going to have some like caveats, which is they accepted all the examples of anti-Semitism in the IHRA code, but they said this does not in any way undermine freedom of expression on Israel or the rights of Palestinians. And this like upset a bunch of like Jewish people who are like low-key, you know, like the Zionist groups and then the Jewish like community groups who support the definition of the IHRA in the fullest extent, because there's like 11 other points that they use as examples of like anti-Semitism. And they said like, oh, using this caveat where you're like, oh, but you can still criticize Israel mm-hmm. is not part of it. You can't do that. And like, it was basically like a giant hubbub of people being like, that's not okay. And then other people being like, you shouldn't have adopted the definition of anti-Semitism by the IHRA because like, it actually says that like criticizing Israel in any way is racist. And so, Yeah, so there was all this drama because they were trying to be like, hey, we take it on. We don't accept anti-Semitism in any form, but we also feel like you can be critical of Israel.
Yeah.
Like you should have the freedom to speak freely about what Israel does in their government and all that. Okay. On that note, I am going to read the definition of the IHRA on anti-Semitism, and I'm going to read the 11 caveats of the definition. So, anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews which may be expressed as hatred towards Jews. Rhetorical and physical manifestations of anti-Semitism are directed towards Jewish or non-Jewish individuals and or their property, towards Jewish community institutions and religious facilities. All right.
Okay. Sounds pretty innocent tame. Enough.
Yeah. So these are the examples of what they argue are like behaviors that are anti-Semitic.
Okay.
Calling for, aiding, or justifying the killing or harming of Jews in the name of a radical ideology or an extremist view of religion.
Fair.
Yes. Making mendacious, dehumanizing, demonizing, or stereotypical allegations about Jews as such, or the power of Jews as collective, such as especially but not exclusively the myth about a world Jewish conspiracy, or of Jews controlling the media, economy, government, or other societal institutions.
Okay.
Yeah, makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Accusing Jews as a people of being responsible for real or imagined wrongdoing committed by a single Jewish person or group, or even for acts committed by non-Jews. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Denying the fact that scope mechanisms, e.g. gas chambers, or intentionally of the genocide of the Jewish people at the hands of the National Socialist Germany and its supporters and accomplices during World War II, the Holocaust, which mm-hmm. is just like denying the Holocaust.
Yeah, exactly.
Accusing the Jews as a people or Israel as a state of inventing or exaggerating the Holocaust. Makes yeah. sense, because that's fucked up.
Yeah.
Accusing Jewish citizens of being more loyal to Israel or to the alleged priorities of Jews worldwide than the interests of their own nations.
Okay.
Yeah, makes sense. Denying the Jewish people their right to self-determination by claiming that the existence of the state of Israel is a racist endeavor, which is like,
that's getting a little fuzzy.
Applying double standards by requiring of it a behavior not expected or demanded of any other democratic nation.
I don't know what that refers to, but okay.
Using the symbols and images associated with classic anti-Semitism, e.g. claims of Jews killing Jesus or blood libel, to characterize Israel or Israelis.
Okay.
Drawing comparisons of contemporary Israeli policy to that of the Nazis.
Oh.
Holding Jews collectively responsible for actions of the State of Israel. Now, clearly, that's true. You can't hold Jews collectively
of course not.
Responsible for what the government of Israel yeah. does. We say that all the time.
Yeah, we didn't tell Allison it was her fault when she was on the podcast last week.
I do think drawing comparisons of contemporary Israel policy to that of Nazis can be anti-Semitic, though.
Of course,
people do it because of the situation with Palestine, but it's not okay because they're different situations.
Yeah,
the Holocaust was a really
atrocious,
really
thing.
Evil, yeah. dark thing, because that was like a consensus within mm-hmm. Germany, which is like, oof, like that's yeah. the type of people we are. We believe in a certain type of person. That's not what's going on in Israel.
Yeah.
That's a whole different world. That's like, you know,
It's just apple and oranges. It's like you can't really compare the two.
Yeah, so I do find that to be anti-Semitism, to be like, can you believe it?
Right, yeah.
The place that I really think goes wrong is claiming that the existence of State of Israel is a racist endeavor.
Because that's Zionism, you know, the belief that Jews are the only, that they deserve their own state and their ancestral homeland, that basically implies that it's taking the place of Palestine. You know what I mean?
Right. And that's kind of where it gets iffy, because it's like, Zionism is racist. It is colonialism. So you can't say Israel's a racist endeavor,
mm-hmm.
but the way it played out became a racist endeavor.
Yeah, 100%.
That's the problem.
If you look at what Israel was in 1948 versus now, it's swallowed up Palestine.
It's a complicated situation, because you can't disregard the feel like what happened with the Palestinians, mm-hmm. by being like, oh, well, that's anti-Semitism to say that the State of Israel today anything wrong. It's like, no, they did do things wrong. So that's why we should be allowed to be critical of the State of Israel.
Exactly.
But it has nothing to do with the Jewish people.
Like, saying that we're unable to criticize Israel, that's almost like dictatory. Like, you know what I mean? Like, unable to criticize a government because it is, I don't know. I mean, would you be okay if I, because we had a tweet recently that wanted us to define Zionism. Do you want me to read it right now?
Sure.
Would that be helpful?
Sure. Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so Zionism is a belief that Judaism is a nationality as well as a religion, and that Jews deserve their own state in their ancestral homeland of Israel, essentially taking the place of Palestine pre-1948. The explicit Jewish character of the Israeli state means that Jews have privileges that others don't. For example, any Jew anywhere in the world can become an Israeli citizen, a right not extended to any other class of person. No race or religion is superior to the next, no one is chosen, and Zionism is a species of colonialism and racism aimed at appropriating Palestinian land and systematically disenfranchising the Palestinians that remain. So.
Yeah, so that, anything that's systematic is problematic, but
I just think that's a helpful thing, because I think a lot of people don't really understand what Zionism means.
Right.
You know, I don't know.
So, Glenn Secker, he's the member of the Jewish Voice of Labor. He said that the decision for the Labor Party to take on the IHRA definition is ludicrous. He says, this is a party that could become the party of government, and we can't discuss matters of foreign policy, the rights of Palestinians to their own self-determination, the suffering that the Palestinians are experiencing at the hands of Israel. We can't discuss that in the Labor Party because it would be defined as anti-Semitic.
Wow.
Secker told Al Jazeera. And the Jewish Voice of Labor, an organization that compromises of Jewish members of the Labor Party, they described the IHRA's code as a threat to freedom of expression and debate, and it offers an inaccurate definition of anti-Semitism. A definition of anti-Semitism which needs to rely on examples which may or may not be anti-Semitic, depending on context, fails that test, the organization said in its submission to the Labor Party consultation on definition of anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeremy Corbyn, the head of the Labor Party, he repeatedly stated that anti-Semitism, racism, and prejudice of all kinds have no place within labor. But on August 3rd in The Guardian, he added, it is unfortunately the case that this particular example dealing with Israel and racism has sometimes been used by those wanting to restrict criticism of Israel that is not anti-Semitic. So that's the problem we always come down to, is
right.
you can't say that being critical of a government that is systematically oppressing people,
mm-hmm.
is anti-Semitic because they happen to be Jewish.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the religion has nothing to do with it at this point.
No,
at
nothing.
This point, it's just like destroying people's homes.
Yeah,
doesn't matter who they are, where they're from,
yeah.
what religion they are. It's
Christians,
displacing
Muslims, whatever.
Human beings who did nothing wrong. They they just wanted their village, and their village is torn down and in a housing unit, which is, you know, mm-hmm. a settlement is built over it because what?
Because of self-determination?
Because they decided, some government decided that you don't get to live here anymore because we want your land?
Yeah.
There was no democracy. There was no vote. Mm-mm. There was nothing. There was no one who was like, well, let's, you know, figure this out. Let's vote and see who's happy with this, who's okay with this. There was no compensation. Mm-mm. For the displacement, there wasn't like, okay, so because we have to take your land, here's some money so you can go find somewhere else to live.
Right.
It was just kind of like, hey, you got to get the fuck out of here.
And if you don't, we're going to kill you.
And we're going to put you in jail, basically.
Yeah.
So
you should look at a map for those listening of how Palestine has changed. And just like, there's like a lot of maps on the internet where you can see the land mass of Israel then versus now. And it's really disturbing. They've just swallowed it whole.
It's just, it's confusing.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's a lot of these points make sense.
But also, for the record, Semitic, I just looked it up because I wanted to double check. Semitic is the definition. It relates to, relating or denoting a family of languages, including Arabic, Hebrew, and Aramaic, and certain ancient languages constituting a main subgroup of the Afro-Asiatic family. And it relates to the peoples who speak Semitic languages, especially Arabic and Hebrew. So Arabs are Semitic as well. Like, anti-Semitic has now meant, it's now in the modern day, means anti-Jew. But Semitic is one people. Like, it's people that speak both Arabic and Jewish. It's not an ethnicity. It's not about religion. It's wider than that. But modern day will have you think it means anti-Jew. And especially in this new definition of it as well.
What's even crazier to me is that the corruptness of someone like Benjamin Netanyahu is outstanding, because the man doesn't care if you're anti-Semitic. He just cares if you're for the government.
Exactly.
That's why he does business with people like Saudi Arabia, who are Saudi Arabians. The government is anti-Semitic.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't care because they don't question his leadership.
Yeah.
It's almost insane. Like, it completely, like, denounces the entire concept of fighting for, like, no anti-Semitism, because it's like, well, you're out here doing business with people who actually really don't care about your people. It's truly wild. Like, I'm going to put this article on our footnotes about who or what Benjamin Netanyahu will do business with, because he's so shady.
If it benefits him, he won't question it. Right, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so crazy. It feels like, okay, so what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm. He's not to be trusted, this shady motherfucker. But I think it's time for another commercial break. So we'll be right back. We're back.
Yes, so anyway, before we left, we were talking about anti-Semitism and one really own definition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was just saying, Benjamin Netanyahu, totally cool with anti-Semites as long as they support Israel's occupation. What can you do?
If he gets a one-up, he's for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just disturbing.
Hypocrisy. Hypocrisy.
And, like, I'm sure in his mind, criticizing him would also be anti-Semitic.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, which is not okay by any means.
Criticizing his wife's, like, postmate bills is anti-Semitic, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, that shouldn't be okay. That's dictatorship.
It truly is. Ugh, are we so over this? Let's move on.
You ready to move on?
Yes.
Okay, Jose. Yeah. I wanted to make that work in your name.
Okay, Jose, Holiday Inn.
Nope. Should we talk about personal stuff?
Personal. Look at us. We're both just voice actors. Personal.
Hire us. So I wanted to, I think we can talk about our experiences at white weddings. We've both been to some in the past couple of weeks. And
we've both been to non-white weddings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. we've both been to weddings. And recently we were at, the most recent wedding I've been to was two white people getting married. I love people in general. Like I'm not saying white weddings are this or that, but it is an interesting experience when you're at a wedding and you stick out like a sore thumb because you're the only Arab there by far, let alone someone that was raised
and you're
Muslim.
Like screaming in Arabic.
No, it's just an interesting experience, and I know it depends on the people that are married and like their network of friends, but for the most part, the vast majority of white weddings that I've been to, I have been the only Arab.
Well, yes, I feel like you at times are the only Arab in most situations, right?
For sure.
Just like I am the only Persian in most situations. Less so in LA, but like when I leave LA, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah, you know, like this past weekend, I didn't notice it now until you just said it, but yeah, I guess I was, I mean, I didn't know any other Persians there. Mm-hmm. There were some Muslim women, but I think they were Arabic because I was like casually looking at the guest book mm-hmm. and they wrote something in Arabic and then translated, and then underneath wrote translated from Arabic. And I was like, oh, they wrote in Arabic. So there were two women and they had their hair covered. So I wasn't necessarily mm-hmm. the only Middle Eastern person mm-hmm. there, but they came much later.
Yeah.
But you, for the most part,
did you feel like you stuck out, or did you not really
notice?
No,
I didn't think I stuck out because I was at a wedding that was mostly my friends.
Oh, right. Okay.
So I didn't feel like I stuck out. I was also like, you know, with people who like were from California. So I didn't feel like I didn't feel any sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I was with friends, so I didn't really like it wasn't mm-hmm. too weird. I have been to weddings where like family friend of mine got married, and she got married to a white person, and it was like this funny thing where it was like all these Persians mm-hmm. and then like all these white people, because you know it's the two families coming together, and it was just like you notice that like the obviously the more ethnic culture like takes mm-hmm. over
because
we're just like loud and crazy
we have our customs that are really like a big part of
and
us,
and it's like all these white people being like, oh, how quaint, you know, like they're
how
just
fun.
Yeah, like they're like learning about it, and they're just like,
like what a cool outfit. What
I don't know, they're like fascinated by it all.
It's like a white person at an Indian wedding.
Yeah, they're just like, wow, bright colors. Yeah,
like I love this outfit, thank you so much. Yeah.
It's pretty funny, but I weddings are a funny thing.
They are interesting to me.
Because conceptually, I mean, they're a bit much.
Oh, yeah. I'm not really a fan of an extravagant wedding. I think it's a waste of money. But I do understand that it's usually for the families and, like, for your parents. And, like, my sister is with a white person. And so I can only imagine that wedding, what it's going to be like. It's going to be just, like, the most amazing blend of that culture. Like, white and Arab. But,
I'm snapping.
Yeah.
Yeah, that should be a fun wedding.
Yeah.
Is his family aggressively white or just like casually white?
They're like third generation Italian American. So, okay. And they're from Indiana, rather.
Hmm.
So.
Like, I tried to be like aggressively white or casually white.
I mean, like.
Like, it's a thing. I'm casually
white.
It
is a little. I think it's a little strange that he's with a Syrian. Like, I don't think they had met one before. You know what I mean? Because
naturally,
yeah,
who meets Syrians very often.
But it'll be fun. I think I'm not a fan of marriage or weddings for myself, but I do appreciate how much people.
That's funny because you're for sure gonna have to be in your sister's wedding, right?
Well, yeah, I know that, but no, I mean for me, I mean like as a person that I've always never wanted to get married or have a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate that other people have them. They hold them in high regard and it's important to them. I just think money is better spent than like one big day. But I also appreciate that it's like a day that's very important to people. Just because I don't understand it doesn't mean it's not important. So,
actually, I just realized I've only ever been to one like Persian on Persian wedding.
Really?
Most of the Persian people I know that get married marry white people.
Oh, that's interesting. A lot of the Arab weddings...
Except for one married a Mexican man. So then I guess that was interesting. But that was funny because they both, like, they met in, like, a salsa dancing class. So there was, like, this really fun, like, kind of, like, Latin, like, Persian vibe going on. Like,
that sounds amazing.
Persians love to dance. And this guy was, like, a salsa dancer. Not to be stereotypical. He literally just was a salsa dancer. Like, he loved to dance. And my... family friend who got married to him,
and we also love to dance, like,
she loved to dance and she like studied dancing and stuff. Oh, so wow. They were like aggressively salsa dancing the whole time, and like all the Persians were like fucking loving it. Like, they were like, oh my God. Like, that was the most fun wedding because it was just like, it was just filled with so much culture.
Right.
Like, and it was like a mash of culture you don't experience. Like,
that's really amazing.
Mexican culture rarely meets Persian culture.
Do you remember
know?
What the food was like?
I don't.
I wonder
it was
if it
a while
was,
ago.
I wonder if it was like one or the other kind of food, like Mexican or Persian.
That's so funny. It's been so long.
That's so cool. That's a really cool mashup.
It was a really funny yeah. cute. Now they have like really adorable kids.
Oh,
a little Persian Mexican baby is so cute.
That's so nice.
Oh, I love yeah. I should go see them soon. But
I've been to like a lot of family weddings and Arab weddings, and I mean like it's just a big party. It's just dancey, you yeah. know? And I've been to also weddings that are more strict and more religious, and those are the ones where like women and men are separate.
Yeah.
Because it's usually if the wife covers her hair, the men are in the same room. But I mean the ones that are the most fun are the ones where we're all like intermingling and just like dancing. And I don't know if this is for Persians as well, but in Arab weddings there's a very traditional, you cut the cake with a sword.
I've never experienced that.
Really? Because in Arab weddings, like, it's always, you cut the cake with a sword and you dance with it. It's like a very, like, I don't know, old school
That's
thing.
So vibey.
It's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that is, like, old school culture. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen a sword. Probably because, like, well, like I said, I always go to, like, American/Persian
right,
weddings.
Yeah.
I did go to one Persian wedding in San Diego, but it was like the most, because they were younger, they were so millennial, like mm-hmm. the bridesmaids like danced down the aisle to like Rihanna or whatever. Like I was like, oh.
Have you ever been to an Arab wedding?
No.
Because I've never been to a Persian wedding, but I've been to an Arab Persian wedding. One of my family friends married a Persian guy.
Oh, nice.
And so that was like a cool experience. Yeah.
It's probably not too different except for the sword cutting.
Well, I think it's just like a weird tradition that like, I don't know if it's from Syria or just like Arab world in general, but it's really fun. I like those little quirks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't.
But
I
yeah.
Just,
but,
now that
so
I
so no one asked
that.
You at this wedding what you were?
No, because it was all my friends. So like no one was
true.
Being like, and you are? Like no one.
Well,
it was
so
like all these people. I
The
like,
only reason
knew
I asked that is because the first white wedding, I'll call it, was this wedding I went to a couple years ago in Colorado. The groom wore camo. There was a camo cake. It was very, very
okay,
white.
Okay, well, that's like, see, that thing is like, you really have to leave.
But I got asked what I was by everybody. I was the only tan person there, let alone an Arab person there. Someone thought I was Indonesian. Someone thought I was, my name was Ethiopian or something. Like, it was just like the most interesting, like,
it's people who are not used to any sort of anything.
Yeah, and that's not to say Colorado people are like that, but there's this particular wedding in
well, there's some serious red zones in Colorado, so.
Yeah, I mean, it was just an interesting experience for me because I really did feel like, maybe it was all in my head, maybe it wasn't, but I thought I felt like I stuck out like a sore thumb. I also had like a picnic at the time, so not only was I like Arab,
real
but I was
weird.
Like, I was just like, there she is, there's that weirdo.
There's me!
Yeah, but.
That's silly.
So yeah, that was a really white experience.
White. Very white experience.
I mean, Colorado is beautiful, though. I want to go back.
It is beautiful.
I love forests.
Took a train through there. It was the most beautiful experience of my life.
It's really a great, great little state.
Yeah, so I don't know.
So I guess the real only reason I brought it up is because I have had that experience where people ask me what I am. But the one I went to last month was a bunch of my college friends. It just so happened that the people that were getting married were both white and had a lot of white friends. Like, I was the only Arab there. My friend was the only black person there. It was a little bit like that.
But they were all your friends, so they didn't even think twice to be like,
yeah.
And you are.
Like, someone, a girl that I also went to college with us came a little later. She was Persian, like, born and raised in L.A. Her family's Jewish. And we both, like, looked at each other. We were just like, represent the Middle East. So we had that, like,
nice
thing. But, it's just interesting.
Yeah, I didn't talk to the Arabic people, or not the Arabic people. Mm-hmm. I didn't talk to the people who wrote in Arabic to the guest book at all.
Yeah.
I just saw them. I was like, oh, that's interesting. People wearing hijabs. And then
I mean, I knew her before. I don't know if I would have talked to her otherwise. You know?
Yeah, I don't think they could automatically look at me and be like, oh, person of Middle East culture. Because like I said, I am very ethnically ambiguous.
And I mean, we did also, our seats were right next to each other. So I don't know if that was purposeful or not.
They're like, okay, keep the brown.
Yeah, exactly.
Shireen will be seat 27.
Yeah.
Other Persian girl will be seat 26.
And my name is Persian, so every Persian I meet assumes I'm Persian, which is fine, but I'm not Persian. So,
Well.
Yeah.
this is awkward.
I think it's also why when people listen to our podcast, they assume I'm the Persian one. You know?
I'm the Persian one.
I'm the Syrian.
I'm the Persian one.
Persian rugs.
Well, that is a stereotype. No, I'm just joking.
You got some great rugs.
Oh my God. I have got to get my dad to tell the story about when he was bringing Persian rugs to the U.S. when I was like 4 years old.
Okay.
Maybe that's a story for another time. I'll tell you a quick thing. But basically, I was like 2 or 3 years old. We were coming back from Iran. My dad was bringing back Persian rugs that were gifted to him for his wedding from his father. It was a whole thing. And so they had kept it for them in Iran. So my dad was finally like, I'm going to bring back these two Persian rugs that are still at my parents' house. My parents have kept these rugs for years. Like, my parents, when they get a rug, they keep them.
That's probably really good quality.
Yeah. Well, it's like an authentic Persian rug. Yeah. Well, now he was like, at the time I got this for like $4,000. Now it would be like $10,000.
Yeah.
So he was trying to bring them back. He got one rug through customs. And then the second rug they kept and said, you can't bring this back because it's from Iran. And then they apparently held me, my mom, and my brother in like customs for a very long time because my dad was able to get through, I guess, separately. And so they held us and they were like, you can't go. They basically told my dad that we would go to jail for bringing this rug. My dad's like, they're children. Fuck you. You're idiots. Hell? And so he like complained and like raised hell in this like Oakland airport because it was like San Francisco or Oakland, probably San Francisco because I was international. And so he like was losing his shit and they were like, you can go, but we're keeping the rug. And then my dad was like, that's some fucked up shit.
Wow.
And he actually just told me this story this past weekend. And so he like was just like kept writing letters to the customs being like, hi, I would like my rug. And they're like, okay, you have to pay us $3,000 for like storage fees. And my dad's like, that's fucking crazy. And somehow he had a friend of a friend who knew a councilman in town. And so they took my dad to meet with this councilman and my dad told him everything that went down. Like, they took my rug in customs. They wouldn't give it back. And now they're basically holding it and say they won't give it to me unless I pay $3,000.
Like,
yeah. And this councilman was like, that's fucking stupid. And he just called the head of customs, was like, stop being racist. Give him the goddamn rug. He'll pay you $100. And they were like, okay, fine.
Oh, my God.
So my dad got to go pick it up, paid $100, got the rug out of there.
Can you imagine crazy? If you didn't have any connections, though? Like, that's so fucked up.
You would have no chance. You couldn't get something that you brought back that's yours because customs wants to be, like, racist and assholes. They were threatening, apparently, to keep me, my mom, and my brother in jail.
What the fuck,
which is like,
man?
Children, you're idiots.
For a rug?
Yeah, my dad's like, I have never wanted to hit a woman, but I was ready to hit this woman in the face. She was so obnoxious. She's just being like,
That's a fucking story, man.
I hate you. Give me my rug, give me my family, and let us get out of here.
That's like that subtle racism that like people don't really pay attention to. That infuriates me.
It really was. I was like, damn.
How old were you? Do you remember?
I was like 2 or 3.
Yeah.
Because I went to Iran for my second birthday. Mm-hmm. So, it must have been when we were coming back from there.
Yeah, fuck that. And it hasn't even gotten better. We told you last week about a woman who had to show her pad at an airport because she wore a hijab. Like, it's not any better, man. I hate that.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Truly crazy. Did you want to read some reviews?
Yeah, I really appreciate all these recent reviews that are coming in and emails that we've been getting. They really mean the world to us. And also everyone that's been buying our merch. You guys look fabulous. We really appreciate it. And I wanted to read some reviews and some emails that we've been getting because they just make our days complete. So I'm on iTunes, where you can leave a review, 5 stars only. But the first one I'm going to read is from Thomas Westenberg. His title is The Best of the Best, 5 stars. This podcast is seriously one of the most informative, funny, topical podcasts there is. The girls are so funny and kind-hearted. They keep you informed on what's really going on in the world with no bias or hate. They have a gift with words and a way of touching your heart. Everyone, give it a listen. Yeah. Do you want to read one?
Snaps, yes. Okay. This is from Rana 47 exclamation point. Love it more the more I listen. Love the perspective on Middle East news and the honest criticism of all the garbage humans administration regime. Snaps.
Yeah.
And the highlighting of awesome people I would never normally hear about. However, honestly, my favorite part is when they call their parents. Oh my God. Thank you, Rana 47 exclamation point.
Yeah, that might be my favorite part too.
Yes.
This next one is from Stephanie in Vermont. The title is informative, awesome, and hilarious, and of course, 5 stars. She says, I discovered this podcast on an advertisement on another How Stuff Works podcast and was immediately intrigued. I started listening only recently, and I'm simultaneously going through all the backlog and listening to more recent episodes. You ladies are hilarious and at the same time real and open. I appreciate all the personal stories on immigrant families, mental health, I'm a social worker in parentheses, and life in the U.S. as a woman of color. Also, my husband is from Turkey and I'm white and I've lived there for 5 years. Oh, so wow. Many of the things you say about your parents remind me of my mother and my father-in-law. My mother-in-law and father-in-law love it. I also appreciate all the information on the Middle East. And I love that you curse a lot because I love to curse too.
Nice.
We see you, Stephanie.
Nice. Stephanie in Vermont and Turkey.
Yeah.
Here's another one. Keep Dropping Mad Knowledge by Taylor Bobiler. 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 Okay, I'm so sorry. thank you for giving me life, dropping mad knowledge, and just changing my life for the better. You two are queens. Thankful AF for your brains.
Yeah.
We're thankful AF for you, a listener, and a loyal review leaver.
Yes. This next one made my day when I read it. It's called Absolutely Love This Too by Armenian Sister. She says, thank you for this podcast. As a hella white passing, technically quote-unquote white Armenian person, I love this podcast, in all caps. Thank you for talking about the Middle East and everything about it that is happening and mainstream media that is ignoring, with those hand clapping emojis between that. Anna and Shireen are down to earth, genuine, honest, and absolutely hilarious. You make me laugh. You make me cry. You make me want to listen and share this podcast with everyone, and everyone should be listening regardless of their background. Thank you for adding comedy and laughter to an area of the world so many people are afraid of. Much love, Armenian sister.
Thank you, Armenian sister.
Sweetest, the sweetest.
Someone shouted out Catherine Hedwig 1999, our dope harmonizing. Episode 54 has some really awesome harmonizing. This episode also talks about mental illness in an incredibly earnest way that is rare to see. You guys rock. I don't recall us harmonizing. I'm sure we did it at some point. It's hard to remember anything.
We should just bring it back.
Yeah, we should.
I want to read Lola Verne's 5 stars. She says, we need more podcasts like this. I love Anna and Shireen. It's a wonderful thing having a source I trust. I love Anna and Shireen. It's a wonderful thing having a source I trust to go to about the Middle East and Islam. My husband was born in Palestine and lived throughout the Middle East for his whole childhood, and I really appreciate getting to learn more about Arab and Persian culture and current events. Yay!
Wow.
Yeah. You should read this one by Yvonne Kaur. That's a good one.
Yvonne Kaur. Sorry, I'm not scrolling quick enough.
No, it's just right under the one I just read.
Oh, Yvonne Kaur.
Oh, sorry.
Personable and informative. Yvonne Kaur. I don't know why I'm having... That was such a struggle for me. I adore Shireen and Anna. Listening to them speak feels like listening to a really intelligent friend. I feel like so frequently we hear discussions about the Middle East that lack cultural competence. We hear the stories of immigrants through the lens of a non-immigrant. These ladies fill that gap. They speak with poise, humor, and candor about the issues of our world, always keeping in mind that culture matters. I've learned so much from listening to this podcast. Contrary to other reviews, I've never felt out of place or attacked listening to them, despite being a white female. What they are doing on Ethnically Ambiguous is so important, and they're doing it really well. 5 out of 5.
Yay! And there's like a few emails I want to shout out because it wouldn't be right if we didn't. But Alec Miracle sent us an email about 10 days ago. They said, hi, ladies. I found this email on your podcast Facebook page. So I hope it's not considered stalking. It's definitely not. but basically, he says that he found our podcast through Dave Ross, who has a podcast called Suicide Buddies, and he mentioned it on his latest episode. Thank you, Dave!
Great show.
Yeah, and it got me interested, so I downloaded it, literally all your episodes, and I just got done listening to the intro and the episode after. He says, why do I listen? I listen to, for a couple of reasons. One is to be informed about the reality of politics and life in the Middle East. Another, because I want to learn Arabic one day, and among other languages. The final reason is because I'm writing a book that takes place in the Middle East, and one of the topics discussed, whether briefly or thematically, but basically he's writing a book, it goes on, but he appreciates our podcast. I can't wait to listen to the rest of the episodes. I really appreciate when someone finds us and makes the effort to listen to all our episodes, because I think it really shows you how much we've grown together. I feel like you can see from our first episode until now, and all the ones in between, just how much we've grown up as people in front of these microphones. So I think it's really cool. And I also think it's cool because I feel like we reference other episodes at times. And so it's just, I think it's helpful for you to, if you have the time, to listen to our backlog. It also has some great phone calls from our parents, and I just like it. But yeah. And the last thing I want to draw attention to is something that we've heard happen to other people before. But Irene Remley sent us an email saying she finally figured out how to rate review our awesome show, and it's by not mentioning Israel.
That's crazy.
This happened to someone else maybe 3 months ago that said the same thing. And basically she says that she loves our show. She started listening from the beginning based on the ads on Feral Media at the time. She tried to rate and review because I know it's very important for the podcast, and my review would not post. She tried multiple times and then she gave up. And then she recently heard someone else could not post because they mentioned Israel. My post had noted that you were not in fact anti-Semitic, as other reviewers had said, merely critical of the Israeli government. And then when she took that out, the review posted. That is absurd.
That is truly absurd.
That's the third or second person that said that to us. Isn't that
You can't say someone is not anti-Semitic, but you can say they are anti-Semitic.
And basically she said that we aren't we're critical of the Israeli government, which according to what your segment was today, is going to be considered anti-Semitic.
Yeah, so, I'm anti-Semitic now, apparently.
But I just thought that was so interesting because we had that brought up before, and it's just...
What the fuck,
Apple? What the fuck, iTunes? come on,
so
man.
That's so strange.
Us out, gets our names out there, and it's just nice to support us. So go on iTunes or your podcast app and rate us 5 stars, no less.
Yeah, and tell a friend, you know?
Yeah, tell a friend
to listen to us.
Let's grow this fam.
Let's grow this fam.
Where can they find us?
You can find us on Twitter at ethnicallyamb, AMB. You can follow us on Instagram at ethnicallyambig, AMBIG. You can follow us on our website, ethnicallyambiguouspod.com, where you can see our footnotes, which are now in the description of the episode. So you can literally look at it on your iTunes. So I don't know why I went into an accent. Your app.
Yeah, it's very convenient.
You can read
now.
Along with us.
We're everywhere. We're on Stitcher, your app, iTunes, wherever you listen to your pod.
Yes. Yeah, and then I'm on Twitter at AnnaHosnieh, AnnaHosnieh.
Yeah.
You can find me there, parting it up.
And I'm on Twitter at ShereenY, ShereenWhy. And on Instagram, I'm ShiroHero, ShereeroHero.
Wow.
Also, I was on a podcast it's on Starburns Audio. It's called Worst Case Scenario. It's basically, it talks about anxiety and your experience with it, and it's hosted by Rebecca and Yusong, and it's so fun. You should give it a listen. The URL is on our Twitter. You can also find it on iTunes and anywhere else you listen. It's called Worst Case Scenario, and it was a really fun time, so I'd recommend listening to it because I love these people, and I think talking about anxiety and mental health is very important, and I had a lot of fun, so listen up.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a good time.
Yeah.
All three of you are great peeps.
Thanks.
There she goes again.
Thanks.
Auditioning.
Hear me.
All right, Sheree Ray, you gonna bite that ass?
I bite that ass.